let's move on to our didactic, who's going to be presented by Dr. Romero. And I think the title is Receiving Addiction Treatment Within the Psychiatric Emergency Services, if I'm not mistaken. And I actually have orders from my fellow colleagues who couldn't be here to ask a lot of questions because they're very interested in this topic. So I'll let Dr. Romero present.
Great, thank you. Let's see, I'm going to share my screen. And yes, would love questions. I think what I'm going to present, everyone here really kind of knows, so I don't think I have anything revolutionary, but I would love to just open the dialogue about this. So let me just get my screen shared. And let's see if I can, okay, let's get over to this. So I'm going to focus on methamphetamine, which I know all of us deal with a lot in our day-to-day work, because that is kind of, you know, that's honestly the bread and butter, as Dr. Martin and Dr. Rosenbaum know, of PES, and hugely, hugely problematic for us here in this community. Let's see. Sorry, I'm a little, oh, there we go. Okay, I have no disclosures. So objectives here, just to kind of briefly review the effects of methamphetamine, clinical presentation, treatment. I found some interesting national and local data on sort of the trends of methamphetamine use in the last few years. And then I looked just at a week of data within the psych emergency services, just to get a sense of the scope of the problem within my little microcosm, and then also just, you know, explore the impact on first responders and resource utilization. And please, we have like a nice small group here. We all kind of know each other. So please, like, feel free to interrupt me, ask questions, just go ahead and speak up. So methamphetamine, as we all know, is a stimulant. And I like this comparison to cocaine because I think it highlights a couple of reasons that methamphetamine is so problematic for us in emergency services. It's stimulant, synthetic, produces a long-lasting high in contrast to cocaine. So clearance from the body, 50% removed from the body in 12 hours for methamphetamine versus 1 hour for cocaine, which definitely leads to resource management issues in PES. Methamphetamine and cocaine both increase dopamine. Methamphetamine does this through increasing dopamine release, as well as blocking the reuptake of dopamine. So you really get quite a flood of dopamine in the brain, whereas cocaine simply blocks the reuptake. Limited uses for synthetic amphetamines in clinical practice, ADHD, narcolepsy, and weight loss. Short-term effects, again, many of us have seen this in our work, increased attention and decreased fatigue, increased activity, wakefulness, decreased appetite. I mean, all of this is sounding pretty good to me, actually, right? Euphoria, rush. But here's where we start to get into the danger zone. We have increased respiration, rapid irregular heartbeats, hyperthermia, increase in body temperature. So that's where we start to see the medical danger come in with methamphetamine use. And of course, as we all see in psych emergency, and as Nancy Martin has a lot of experience with over press, methamphetamine can produce psychotic symptoms, so delusions, paranoia, hallucinations, as well as agitation, both verbal and physical aggression, which is why, of course, officers are often involved, because people who are intoxicated with methamphetamine tend to not be just sort of placid and mellow. They are agitated, aggressive, and potentially violent. Then you can get into a life-threatening situation of an excited or agitated delirium. And I've seen this a few times in PES where folks are brought in, they are so completely agitated, is refractory to every kind of medication, you know, multiple doses that we try, and they kind of progress to this situation where they become hyperthermic, they can develop rhabdomyolysis, which is muscle breakdown, which can lead to kidney injury. And those folks really, you know, they have to be hospitalized, often at ICU level care. Stroke and cardiac events are also medical sequelae of methamphetamine use. long-term effects. Of course, we see this a lot as well. Addiction, of course, methamphetamine is highly, highly reinforcing, as we can all see from kind of the initial positive effects that people feel from using stimulants. Psychosis, again, the paranoia, hallucinations, changes in brain structure and function. So methamphetamine is just so bad for the brain. And over time, we see lots of patients who unfortunately just progress into a state of chronic psychosis that does not cease. Even if they're able to stop using methamphetamine, they continue to have a psychotic looking picture, much like someone with a primary psychotic disorder like schizophrenia. Deficits in their cognitive and motor skills, again, memory loss, aggressive behavior, mood disturbances, and of course, the terrible dental problems that folks with methamphetamine use disorder often present with. So this picture is really busy, and so we won't go through all of it, but what I really like about this illustration is it just demonstrates the degree to which methamphetamine has these just terrible and detrimental effects on the brain in lots of systems. So in addition to, you know, increasing dopamine release and all the things that that means, we have activation of glutamate, we have activation of inflammatory systems within the brain. So I don't want to get like too into the weeds into this, but just knowing that meth is just, it's so bad. It's just, it's damaging to the brain in a multitude of different ways, in complex ways that we're sort of just, you know, learning more and more about. I like to tease that there's going to be a quiz at the end, but obviously there's not going to be a quiz on this. I wouldn't pass that quiz. I thought this was really interesting, again, just to kind of highlight the degree to which meth is so addictive. And I have references at the end that reference this paper. So an average of 50 days from first use of methamphetamine to the craving of methamphetamine, 60 days from first use to regular use, and then 85 days on average from first use to compulsive use. Which is just like astounding to me that from the first use to roughly 3 months later, you can have a person who is, you know, full on addicted with compulsive use and all the problems, obviously, that follow from that. 42% of those who use methamphetamine over a lifetime report psychotic symptoms. And methamphetamine use, as with all substance use disorders, is very frequently comorbid, as again, we all know, with depression, trauma, other psychiatric disorders. Folks are using substances in order to self-medicate psychiatric symptoms. So here's like our cycle, right? We sort of start at the bottom with people, so many people, unfortunately, who are born into situations in which they suffer trauma, neglect, and develop shame and stigma around that trauma and neglect, develop PTSD, depression, anxiety, turn to substances to self-medicate what are very, very distressing symptoms. And then, you know, that leading to loss of employment, housing, possibly incarceration, which ultimately just, you know, trauma begets trauma. And so we get stuck in this cycle of trauma, symptoms, self-medication, which can be very difficult to pull someone out of. So treatment, I wish I had better news on this. There's really no proven pharmacologic treatment. We've been really lucky with opiate use disorder, methadone, Suboxone. We have such great treatments for opiate use disorder. Unfortunately, we do not yet have a similar treatment for methamphetamine use disorder. There was a study published recently showing like some positive results with the combination of naltrexone and bupropion. It performed better than placebo, but there's just not a very robust literature base on this. And to what degree it's being researched, I honestly couldn't even tell you. So we kind of rely on behavioral interventions, cognitive behavioral therapy, behavior activation, contingency management, exercise. Unfortunately, those behavioral interventions often have a very high discontinuation rate. So keeping people engaged in treatment is a huge problem, especially when you consider what you're competing with, which is, you know, the highly reinforcing properties of methamphetamine versus come on over and like do these behavioral interventions. It's pretty tricky to get people to buy into that and to, you know, to stay committed to that. Of course, underlying all of this is we need to treat the comorbid psychiatric disorders. So we need to treat the PTSD. We need to treat the depression and the anxiety. But it's frustrating, right, when you're trying to treat those disorders and overlying it is the methamphetamine use disorder, which just really kind of overpowers what you're trying to do with the underlying additional psychiatric disorder. So I want to switch gears a little bit just to look at some national and state data. This is taken from CDC, MMWR, DOH, National Institute of Drug Addiction. So again, I'm not telling you anything all of us don't already know, but this just for me, I think is like an astounding, it just brings it into really sharp focus about how bad this problem is. So we see from the period of 2010 to 2018, that methamphetamine use increased by 195%, which is a big number, right? And then, you know, even more tragic within this time frame of just a year, 2015 to 2016, overdose deaths from stimulants increased by 42%. So pretty staggering numbers there. I think this is really sort of an interesting graph, and I like that they sort of compare it with opioids, because obviously that's been a huge problem for New Mexico, a huge problem nationally, and has gotten rightfully so a lot of attention. So we see here just psychostimulants without any opioid, and this includes, so the psychostimulants includes methamphetamine as well as other psychostimulants, but you see kind of that light green line, overdose deaths involving the stimulants kind of just on the steady rise and kind of even eclipsing, you know, those with opioids involved. Because with opioids, we have Narcan, right? So that's a, I mean, it's a life-saving intervention. We don't have anything similar for methamphetamine. And then just some, you know, unfortunately really sad data from our state. Overdose death rates within New Mexico. And this is all cause. So this is not specific to methamphetamine, but just again, illustrates the magnitude of the problem for our community compared to national data. Again, I just like the comparison here. I mean, I don't like it because it's not good news, but I think this really illustrates the point, again, how methamphetamine is just becoming such an enormous problem and sort of, you know, approaching and eclipsing the problem that we've seen in the past with opioids. So overdose death involvement percentage from the drug types, you see the light gray is methamphetamine. This is, so there was a study done at UNM by some of my colleagues there. So I call this the big data, and then we'll get to the small data, which is my little data, but this is the big data study. And it looked at methamphetamine abuse trends in our PES. So from, they looked at data from this period of 2007 to 2016, and sort of a couple different things. The number of just general encounters in our psych emergency service has been on a very steady rise for many years. I did my residency at UNM, and now of course I work there, and we were never busy like this when I was a resident. So we've had just a very steady increase in volume. So by 58% between those years, 2012 to 2015. But again, the more astonishing number, right, is that the number of methamphetamine use encounters increased by an average of 129%, so pretty steep. Methamphetamine use encounters outpaced use of cocaine at 30% and THC 79% within that same time frame. And then methamphetamine use encounters rose from 5% of the total encounters in 2007 to more than 20% of the total encounters of PES in 2015. So again, it's our bread and butter. We see a ton of it. And then I just looked at like 1 week of data from PES. I just did my own little chart review, and here is what I found. Not surprising. So 25% of the total encounters for a week in PES were patients tested positive for meth. And so these are just, again, this is very unscientific. This is just me doing chart review. So for those patients that we had urine drug screen data on, which is most patients in PES, 25% of those had meth on board. whereas only 5% of our encounters had opiates, which, you know, logically makes sense. Those folks who use opiates tend to not have encounters with us, because usually that's going to involve like the main ED, because there's respiratory depression. I mean, these are folks who are mellow, but mellow to a point that it's life-threatening. Whereas with stimulants, folks are not mellow. They're aggressive, they're agitated, they're psychotic, and they get brought to our attention.
Dr. Romero, looks like we have a question from the chat. Maria Wolf asked, in the big data set, how was the meth use encounter determined? Was it blood tests or behaviors observations?
That is a great question. I'm going to assume, and I would have to go back to the paper, that it was through urine drug screen data. So that's how we, that's how we test for substances in PES, is through urine drug screen. All right. Of those patients that we saw in PES who did test positive for meth, 30% were transported via law enforcement. Again, no surprise. And then 30%, an additional 30% came from another emergency department. So that could be the UNM main emergency room, that could be SRMC's emergency room. And of those, 55% were brought in by EMS. The reason I put this up there is it just, for me, it sort of brings to bear how, you know, how many resources are involved in transporting, treating patients with methamphetamine use disorders. You have law enforcement, multiple emergency rooms, EMS services.
Sorry, I had a quick question. Where does the other 40% come from?
That, you know, we do get walk-ins. So yeah, so surprisingly, we do get walk-ins, family that bring folks in. So yeah, it's kind of a, it's a sort of a variety of walk-ins, family presentations.
Thank you.
And then as far as like disposition, like what happens after you get in the door at PES? Well, usually you spend more than 20 hours with us if you are crashing from methamphetamine. So it just, because of that long duration of metabolism for methamphetamine intoxication, we often wind up keeping folks for 20 plus hours. I mean, sometimes 36 hours. We sort of, you know, in a dark humor kind of way, joke about like what kind of meth is on the street in any given week in PES, depending on how severe patients are and how long they're taking to clear. And as a lot of us know here on this call, PES has 6 beds in our locked unit. So if you figure 2 or 3 of those beds are patients who are metabolizing meth intoxication for greater than 20 hours, it really does put a strain just on our system individually. Once people clear, and most of them do, 59% of those we saw during that week were discharged either home or to a shelter, which is often the case. 21% went to an inpatient hospitalization or to a detox center. So it is, I think, sometimes kind of shocking. Officers will bring a patient in, or EMS will bring a patient in, and they are so wild, they are so psychotic, so agitated. And then, you know, 24 hours, 36 hours later, they walk out the door. It's like, what? You let that person, you know, why is that person walking out the door? Because they do clear enough to no longer be an acute danger to themselves or others, in which case our hands are tied legally. You know, we cannot force people to get substance use treatment. And it's difficult. Families often have a difficult time with this. They don't, you know, they want so badly for their family member to get treatment. And I want so badly for that to happen. But it's very difficult to do unless the patient is on board and wants to seek treatment. I'll just go through this really quickly. This was just, I just did this in PES. I surveyed the staff, the nurses, and the techs in PES. Just to see a little bit what the attitudes were about what they felt the scope of the problem was. So these were the 4 questions I asked, just a 5-point Likert scale from, you know, disagree to strongly disagree to strongly agree. Whether meth, so MUD, MUD is meth use disorder. If it's a common presenting problem, if there are adequate resources, is it rewarding to treat patients with meth use disorder? And do patients with meth use disorder present a safety risk? And I'm sure you guys will not be too surprised by the results. Everyone, you know, agreed or strongly agreed that it is a common problem. It was a little more spread in terms of the perception of treatment resources, but tended, you know, was either undecided agree or strongly agree that there is a lack of treatment resources. Most were undecided or agreed that it is rewarding to treat patients with meth use disorder, which I don't know, I felt a little positive about in the sense that it was more toward the positive. Everyone really agrees or strongly agrees that patients with meth use disorder present a safety risk to staff. And we definitely see that just in day-to-day practice. So obviously this has an impact on everyone, you know, law enforcement, CIT, providers. It's frustrating because there does seem to be the perception that there's a lack of resources. Patients with meth use are high service utilizers. There's a high recidivism rate. And again, because treatment options are minimal, these folks keep coming back. And it's a bummer, right? None of us want to be verbally or definitely not physically assaulted when we go to work. We realize that it is a reality of our respective jobs, but it still takes a toll. And just again, the multiple entities that have to get involved and the resource utilization that comes to bear. So what do we do? I always feel like this talk is very negative, so I want to try to end on an optimistic note. We're going to keep trying. And my attitude, and I think the staff at PES, what we try to remember is that every time we see a patient, and they may be a patient we have seen three times that week, sometimes twice in one day, but every time is an opportunity, right? And we may just, there may be some small change about that interaction that moves the needle just a little bit, just moves them toward wanting to seek treatment. So we just, you know, we keep trying, we hope for that. We hope that little tiny thing is going to happen. And maybe as we build up those little tiny bricks, we can create, you know, a foundation for them getting treatment. I think the bigger societal issue, and again, I don't have a solution for this, but I think it's something I hope that, you know, as a nation, we can talk more about, is addressing those root causes in trauma, poverty, access to care, housing, just all sort of the basics that contribute to the problem. And I just like this, that Thomas Edison, it took him over 10,000 failed prototypes before he developed a working light bulb. So, you know, we have to try, we have to keep trying 10,000 times. And let me just end on a positive note. I just really like this quote from Nelson Mandela: "Do not judge me by my successes, judge me by how many times I fell down and got back up again." So. Thank you very much for your attention. Happy to answer any questions.